Well, hey, I am glad to be here. We are continuing this series called Camera Roll, which I've loved this series. And if this is your first time being a part of the series, basically a couple months ago, I started looking through my camera roll, pulled out pictures that I said, ooh, these would make great sermons. And then I put a sermon to a different picture. And the hard part was actually choosing which pictures I wanted to actually turn to sermons, because as I went through my camera roll, I realized, oh my goodness, there's so much wisdom contained here in these photos. And so I hope you've been enjoying this series. And I was thinking about it. I was cutting the lawn the other day, and I was on my tractor riding around, and that's my time to think. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to do another camera roll series. Camera roll times two. I mean, we'll hit that up next summer. But today, I have two pictures for us, and I guess you could say the image that I'm going to show you, the item that I will have here on a photograph, it's one of my favorite things to take a picture of. That's why I have two of these items. So first, let's do a sermon title, because you always need a good sermon title, do you not? I mean, seriously, half the fun for me is just figuring out what the sermon is going to be titled. And once I have it, I jump around the room in glee. So the title of this sermon is... one more slide here. What payphones can teach us about the Bible? Yes. Oh, so good. Now, let's look at the first photo for us today. Who can tell me what this is? Now, I think I was trying to figure out, okay, at what age do people stop recognizing what this is a picture of? I was thinking about 20. So I think it's safe to say we're all a little above 20 here, right? So we all know what this is, right? We all remember how to use this, do we not? Yeah. We've all used this before at some point in our life. It's probably been a couple of years, if you're like me, maybe quite a few years. Okay, so I took this picture, and then here's one that I absolutely love. One more slide. Like, what in the world? I mean, I can understand the first one because there's an actual phone there, but what is this payphone booth doing here in the middle of nowhere? I mean, there's not even a phone. If you wanted to use it, I mean, don't you think that someone would have taken this down by now? Yet here it's been standing for extra bonus points. Anyone recognize where this is? It's by the Home Depot in Hawthorne, actually, where I ran into Ernesto last Sunday. I run into his family everywhere I go. I went to Home Depot, and I went home and I told Steph, I'm like, guess who I ran into again? She's like, we're like the same people. We go to the same places all the time. Like, I kid you not, probably three or four times we've already run into each other this year. So I love taking pictures of payphones, because whenever you see it, it's like an antique. It's a relic of a time long, long, far, far in the past. And for anyone under 20, if they were to see this, so I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, as they get a little bit older, I'm assuming at some point, maybe they'll see this picture, maybe the other one will run into another payphone at some point, they're going to ask, they're going to say, hey, what is that thing? Why is there a phone on this building? Or why is there a phone in that booth? And then for anyone under 20, you're going to have to go through and explain what it is and how to actually use it. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to look at it, they're going to have no idea how to use it, they're going to have no idea what it is, because for their life, they've grown up with a parent, with a friend, whoever it might be, having a cell phone in the back of their pocket, and eventually they'll get a cell phone as well. The majority of us here in America, we're used to cell phones. Not many of us use pay phones anymore. So here's how we would have to explain it. We can go one slide. I wrote out some of the details. Correct me if I'm wrong. For anyone under 20, first off, if you want to make a phone call, you have to find one of these phones. Do you remember this? Years ago, you're like, oh no, I need to call my mother. Let me go find a payphone. So then you finally locate a payphone. And then sometimes, if it's a really busy area, you're going to have to wait in line for this payphone, right? Do you remember this? So you're waiting, you're like, oh my goodness, like, you keep looking at your watch, you don't have a phone to actually look through because you're bored, so you're just waiting there thinking about whatever it happens to be. Would this person just end the conversation with Sally already? Like, you already told Sally, you vented everything to her already, please let the next person go. And then what's going to happen, you're going to pick the phone up, you're going to put some quarters in. Do we remember what quarters are? Probably another detail that we're going to have to explain to our children or those under 20, right? Like, hey, there's a thing, like money, you kept it in your pocket. It was a physical thing. It wasn't just a chip, a credit card, a thing that you paid with on your phone. You couldn't digitally transfer money. You'd actually have to have a quarter. You put it into the slot, or if you didn't have a quarter, you would call the person collect, and you would hope and pray that they would actually accept your call. Like, you have a collect call from, and then you state your name, and then they're like, yes, all right, I'll accept the charges for this call. So here you are, you dial the number, you're talking for a few minutes, and then that voice, it was a female voice. Do you remember this voice? Please deposit 25 more cents in order to continue your call. And then you're like scrambling through your pocket, you're like, oh no, I have no more quarters, or you have another one. This was the experience of the payphone. For those younger, if they were to ever see a payphone, I know there's not too many of them, but obviously I found a couple, or I guess one and a half is technically what I found. You would have to explain all these details in order for them to understand what the purpose of this phone was, or if it's still in use, what the purpose is. But without those details, the person would be lost, would they not? Like, if they just happened upon one of these phones and looked at it, like, what's going on here? Like, why is that thing just standing here in the middle of a field? Or why is this thing attached to a building? Well, I would suggest that the Bible operates in the same way. Without some of the details surrounding the Bible, the history in which it was written, the message can sometimes get a bit off the rails, can it not? Now, maybe you've experienced this before with reading the Bible. So I would argue that payphones are just like the Bible, and we need details in order to understand what's happening within its pages. Now, when I was in seminary, I had my Hebrew professor, the great Dr. Widbin, and here's something that he would say almost every single class. And I have memorized, this is like seared into my memory. You ever have a teacher and they say the same thing over, but it's so profound, it's so brilliant, and you carry that around with you? So here's something that he said that I carry with me every time I open the pages of the Bible. He said, the Bible wasn't written for us. Now, when I heard that, I'm like, whoa, hold on a second here. Like, I'm in seminary. Isn't the Bible the thing, like the manual? It's the guide. It's the thing that we're, it's the reason why we're here at seminary. It's the reason why we're training to become pastors, because we want to talk about the Bible. And so when he said that, I was like, wait, hold on. What's going on here? But he would say, I went to Israel with him time and time again. The Bible wasn't written for us. And then he went on to explain. He said, well, it can't mean today what it never meant when it was written. In order to understand the Bible, we have to discover what it meant within the context in which it was originally written. When we read our 21st century perspective into the Bible without understanding the history and the time in which it was written, things get a bit wobbly with the Bible. Let me show you what I mean by this. Let's look at Deuteronomy. Let's go one more slide. We don't need this. This is Deuteronomy chapter 21, starting in verse 10. And I'm still waiting for the couple to say, hey, here's the verse that the verses that we want read at our wedding. When you go to war against your enemies and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands and you take captives, if you notice among the captives a beautiful woman and are attracted to her, you may take her as your wife. Bring her into your home and have her shave her head, trim her nails, and put aside the clothes she was wearing when captured. After she has lived in your house and mourned her father and mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. If you're not pleased with her, let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you have dishonored her. Still waiting for that couple. Haven't had it yet. All right, so it's at this point when we read this, a couple things can happen. First, you throw your hands up in the air and you're like, this is exactly what's wrong with the Bible. This is why I don't read the Bible, and you just write the whole thing off. You're like, seriously? Like, what? Like, the Bible is so barbaric. I mean, do you not read verses like this? So you just dismiss the entire thing as being ancient and irrelevant for us in our lives today. Or sometimes what can happen is you dismiss a portion of the Bible. You read a verse, you're like, eh, nothing for me. Old Testament, yeah, that's great, but we have Jesus. New Testament, much better. Who needs the Old Testament? You read a verse like this and you're thoroughly, thoroughly confused. Chances are these verses weren't your morning devotion. Just guessing. You didn't sit with these for 10, 15 minutes this morning like, oh, thank you for these verses. Changed my life. But what? Let's see what happens here if we were to fill in some of the details of the history of the world when this text was written. So I'm going to give you four details to hopefully help us understand exactly what's going on here in Deuteronomy. Let's go one slide. First, it began, verse 10, when you go to war against your enemies. Here's the first detail. In the ancient world, war was a reality of life. Go one more slide. Basically, notice, when you go to war, not if you go to war, it's when you go to war. Tribes were fighting all the time. So it's almost like saying, when you go grocery shopping, when you pay your credit card bill, when you get in a car, are these not all things that you most likely have done in the past month, 6 months? War, just like grocery shopping for us today, it was an accepted reality of the world at that time. When you go to war. I mean, the world back then, it looked a bit like Game of Thrones. We've progressed in the world some degrees. Unfortunately, war is still a reality, but it's not the reality for all of us all the time. If you lived in the ancient world, the time in which the Bible was written, there would kind of be this constant fear, like, are we going to be attacked? Are our enemies going to come and try to attack us so they can conquer our land and our possessions? It always would be a thought in the back of your mind. So when you go to war against your enemies, like, yeah, you know, when you go grocery shopping. Now some of you are like, okay, I kind of like where this is going. When you go grocery shopping and you see an attractive young lady, all right, we're not going there. So let's look at the second historical detail. When you go to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands, and you take captives. In other words, when you win, when you conquer your enemy, when you go to war and you're favored, you are the conquering army. Now, here's another historical detail about war. Go one more. All the possessions of the losing army rightfully belong to the winners to do with whatever they wanted. We can go one more. There's a phrase, maybe you've heard this phrase, the spoils of war. Who's heard this phrase before? It means you won. Winner takes all. I mean, maybe it came from a couple thousand years ago, that phrase. We still talk about it when we play poker, because that's kind of like a war, is it not? It's like a battle. So whenever you win, when you beat your enemies and you conquer them, every single possession of theirs now rightfully belongs to you. So that would include money, jewelry, livestock, which a lot of you probably have livestock in your backyards, I know here now. It would include weapons, food, clothing. It would include women, because in the world at this time, women were seen as another possession. This is what the world looked, not just the world of the Bible, this was the entire world at the time in which the Bible was written. So when you go to war, when you go grocery shopping, and you, or when you go play poker, maybe we'll go with that illustration for a bit, whenever you win, everything, you never, like that person throws like the keys for their car in the poker thing, like, yeah, I got the whole thing. Every single thing that belonged to the army that you just conquered is now rightfully yours, and you can do with it whatever you want to do with it. You can treat it however you wish. It's a possession. Women, during war, were merely seen as another possession. But yet here, what we find is something revolutionary for the world at this time. Rather than just, you see an attractive woman, you can just take her as another possession. What we're told here in Deuteronomy is you take her as your wife. I mean, do you see what's happening here? In a world where women were simply a possession, now you're bringing her into your home as a wife? I mean, is this not granting dignity and respect to women at a time when this wasn't the norm? You're providing food, shelter, clothing. What we find here in these verses, we look at it now, we're like, oh my goodness. But in the world at this time, I mean, this was a giant step forward. Let's look at another detail for us. The story continues. You bring her into your home. You have her shave her head, trim her nails, and put aside the clothes she was wearing when captured. After she has lived in your house and mourned her father and mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be your husband. Anyone have any idea? Maybe you can see where this is going. Any idea what these couple of actions are? Shaving her head, trimming her nails, putting aside the clothes? They're ancient mourning rituals. Yeah, this is huge. This is huge. You can go one more slide. What we're being told here, the Israelites in Deuteronomy, they said, give her some space to mourn. Some space to grieve. Respect her humanity. Take her into your home, but allow her the space to grieve that which she has lost. She's just witnessed destruction. Possibly the entire destruction of her village, her home, her tribe. Mourn her father and mother. Maybe they died in the war. Maybe she'll never see them again. She's being brought somewhere else. I mean, this is a massive step forward for women in the world at this time. Give her space to grieve and to mourn properly. You can't simply treat her as you want. You can't treat her as a possession. Yes, she'll be your wife, but give her a month. Give her the time that she needs to mourn all that she has lost. I mean, do you see how revolutionary this passage is for a world where women had nothing? No rights, no respect. And then let's look at one more final detail. So it ends here at verse 14. We'll go one more. It ends with, if you're not pleased with her, which you're like, all right, here we go again. Step backwards, is it not? But hold on a second here. Let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you have dishonored her. Oftentimes, women captured in war were then sent off on their own. They were sold because, again, they were your property. So, of course, you could go and sell them for money because they were just another possession. They were the spoil of war. And we're being told, no, don't sell. They're not a slave. Provide for her, send her off wherever she wishes. Oftentimes, women captured in this way would then have to fend for themselves, and they would many times turn to prostitution. This is saying, let her go where she wishes. Send her off. Provide for her. Don't just sell her into another home. Respect her. Offer her dignity. Now, question for us. One more. Is this passage in Deuteronomy, is it a step backwards for our culture? For where we are today? Most likely you would say yes. Of course, right? We would all agree with this, would we not? We look at this and at first glance we're like, oh, seriously. Don't go yet. Don't give away my slides yet. Is this picture a step backwards for us in 2022 today? Yes. Do you guys know what these are? You do? You know how to work them? You've never used one before? Yeah, it's a step backwards. Step backwards. Let me ask another question. I think I have the question here. Was this passage in Deuteronomy, was it a step forward for where the world was at the time? Yeah. Now, go back to that picture of the payphone. When this was first introduced, was this a step forward for where the world was at the time in which payphones were introduced? You could now be out and make a phone call as long as you had quarters. See, the Bible is just like payphones. You have to understand the historical details, and what happens is we keep moving forward. When we look back 20, 30 years at where technology was, where the world was, you know, we look back and we're like, oh yeah, it's a bit barbaric, but things progress ever so slowly. The Bible is actually progressing humanity forward. When we miss these details, when we miss the context in which a passage like this was written, that's when we just dismiss the Bible as having absolutely nothing to say to us in our world today. We miss the spirit behind the passage. What the Spirit was doing more than 5,000 years ago, meeting people exactly where they were. Imagine God coming down and trying to talk about payphones to people in Deuteronomy. They'd be like, makes no sense. This is how God has been working from the beginning of time, coming to humanity where we find ourselves, meeting us in our space, and then ever so slowly, because it's a long, painful process, moving us forward into greater wholeness, into greater love, one step at a time, meeting culture, meeting us individually where we are, and then pulling us forward into greater wholeness. Now, when we understand these details, we come to realize a passage like this has a tremendous amount of wisdom for us today. It raises all sorts of questions for us in the 21st century. I want to look at two of those questions today. Let's go, probably two more. One more. Here we go. First question. Are there any places in our world today where women are objectified and dehumanized? You watch any advertisements on NASCAR, the NFL? Are there any places here in our world where women are objectified and dehumanized? Have we made progress? Sure. Do we still have a ways to go? I would argue yes. Passage like this shows us God meets us where we are, but then wants to pull us forward into greater respect for all people, greater wholeness for ourselves and for this culture. Read a passage like this. We look back, we're like, ugh, but we see it's a step forward where God is saying women should be respected. The same is true for us in our world today. So a passage like this that at first glance we're like, eh, we realize, whoa, it convicts. It still has a lot to speak to us in our world today. And then a second question for us. Are there any groups within our world who have been marginalized and dehumanized? Yeah. Any people groups? People of certain descent, skin color. Yeah, we live in a world that it's not perfect. We live in a world where certain people are stripped of their humanity. They're not given the respect that every human deserves. The respect that God desires every person to receive. So again, a passage like this, we're like, oh, there's no way. But then we look a little deeper into it and we realize, whoa, there's actually quite a bit here for us, meeting us where we are, but then saying, well, there's more that I have for you. There's more love to offer. There's still another step and then another step to take so that we're all on equal footing. Let's go one more. So I mentioned before, what we see here and what we see all throughout the Bible is we see a picture of God who meets us exactly where we are and desires to move us forward into greater love and wholeness one step at a time. I kind of see it like parenting. As I mentioned, I have a 5- and a 2-year-old. I don't treat the 5-year-old like he's 16. I meet him where he is, with all that comes with that. I don't treat the 2-year-old the same way as I treat the 5-year-old. She's in a different place than her brother. I have the same love for them, but I interact with them differently, and I will continue to interact with them differently as they age. When he turns 8, 9, I'll interact a little different. I'll meet him where he is. I'll speak to him at the level where he finds himself. It's how God interacts with each of us. You know, sometimes we put pressure on ourselves to be here. We'll take these seats here. We'll take row D for a moment. Sometimes we feel like we should be over at D1, but we're like over here at D10. And we're like, we see this gap and we're thinking, oh my goodness, what must God think of me? What do other people think about me? I see other people and they're super Christians, right? Super followers of Jesus. We look at ourselves, we're like, there's this gap of like 8 seats right here. And the shame, it's all self-induced. It's all self-induced. The guilt we feel for not being where we think we should be comes from within. Sure, the Spirit convicts because the Spirit wants to move us forward, but God is not a God of shame. God wants to come to you at D10 and then move you to D9. And sometimes that takes a year. Maybe it takes 6 years. Maybe when we're 6 feet under, we only make it to D6. It's okay. The whole thing's about grace. What we see here in Deuteronomy is a God who comes to us exactly where we find ourselves. God didn't try moving the culture all the way there to D1. Maybe it was like D9.5. It's okay. It's how God works. God has patience for us. Grace. Any shame we feel for thinking we need to be or should be somewhere else, it's from within. It's not from God. This is who we see Jesus is. Every single story we find of Jesus in the Gospels. So we see Jesus, fully God on earth, interacting with humanity, meeting every single person where they were. And not shaming them forward, but pulling them forward with love, with grace. Every single interaction was different, because we're unique individuals. We wouldn't want God to treat us or look at us, interact with us the same way as the person sitting next to you right now. What we desire, and see, God has respect for us. That's why we see Jesus meeting each person, interacting with everyone differently. So that's why the Bible, it's like a payphone. You have to understand some of the details. Yeah, some things, whew, glad we're beyond that. But there's always the next step to take. And it's a step that's taken with love, with God coming to you and showering grace and love upon you so that you can take another step into wholeness. into the life that you truly desire. Let me pray for us.